Our next speaker will be Dr. Rhoda Burrows from South Dakota State University.
Before we get started, I'm just curious, how many of you have worked with Native Americans? Anyone? Several of you? I work with primarily Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota, Lakota Reservation. We also do work with some other of the reservations. And that's not the... There we go. Working on the reservation, as you may imagine, has some particular challenges. Working with the Lakota, who are a hunter-gatherer society, have some rather mixed attitudes towards gardening. In many cases, gardening was kind of foisted on them in the early 19th century. Demands of extended families can compete with the ability to maintain gardens. Of course, we live in the upper Great Plains where we have all kinds of climatic challenges. High poverty. Average per capita income on the Pine Ridge is $7,500. And of course, along with that, poor roads, unreliable cars, no money for gas. If you're going to have a series of meetings, you may or may not get people there more than once because of these challenges. And then dogs and horses tend to run loose on the reservation, and so fencing is often a requirement, and vandalism can be an issue sometimes too. So why do we persist? The income, as I mentioned, $7,500 a year doesn't give you much to buy food. Mental and physical health, one in five persons is diabetic, over 40% are obese, so there's a lot of health challenges. And the idea that for the native peoples that they can get back to producing their own food and have some independence. Some of the things that we've tried that have worked or sort of worked. One of the nonprofits, or several of the nonprofits on the reservation, required gardening classes in order to come out and rototill the gardens. And that worked pretty well. We started with an 8-session course, and remember what I said about getting people there consistently, with a certificate of completion, and we had about 10 people that completed this course. The participants received a stipend plus travel dollars to buy that gas to get there. 1 year we had a garden for them to work with, 1 year we did not. One of our more successful endeavors has been demonstration gardens with paid caretakers, often VISTA volunteers. And then again, that carrot approach of 2 to 3 classes required for assistance with high tunnels, and that's a current project right now. Pine Ridge is trying to buy from 10 to 30 high tunnels to put out at various locations across the reservation to try to get some healthy food on the reservation. There's only 1 or 2 grocery stores, and produce is very high cost. So one of the things that we look at is changing the culture with the youngest generation. And we learned on Tuesday that 4-H was started kind of to try to get the parents in as well. And that's kind of a similar tactic here. This is one of our demonstration gardens, with exception of the upper right hand. One of the things that we've learned with our demonstration gardens is what difference it can make in the lives of the local people. And in the lower right hand corner are 2 of our VISTA volunteers. Both of them have attested that this gardening project probably saved their lives. Suicide is very high on the reservation. The woman there was addicted to meth, and she says, when the meth cravings got too bad, I'd go out in the garden, even in the middle of the night. One of the fun things that's come out of this is as we pull back from our white ways of doing things and working with the natives and letting them start to take control of the projects, is the cultural designs. We start to get rid of those rectangles and straight rows. And you can see here the creativity that has come out. The bottom one is actually in the design of a dragonfly. You can kind of see the wings coming towards us. And one of the things we've learned about that, if you don't have straight rows, when people go out to a garden, they tend to stay there longer. They feel more comfortable. One of the projects that we've been working with is to address the fact that emotional health is a huge part of what we have to address when we work on the reservation. This was a speaker that we'd brought in working with veterans. And it was a two-day project, building high tunnels and learning how to garden high tunnels. The first day we had 7 participants. They went home that night and talked to all their friends and relatives and said, you got to come to this. This is really important. The next day we had 49. These pictures are a direction that we're starting to go. One of the things that have come up over and over again that people are requesting are a way to store the produce. Electricity is not always available or consistent on the reservation, either through the power line or through somebody paying the bill. So root cellars are something that we're looking at. And this particular contractor built his own root cellar using old tires, which, as you might imagine, are also very abundant on the reservation. He also built this wallapini, which is this sort of built-in-the-ground greenhouse. Stays warm, minus 20 degrees outside, maybe 55 degrees inside naturally. So that's another thing that we're looking at. This is not our project, but we have worked with it, and it's an example of a project that's worked very well. This woman has started working with the youth in the community, and has kind of expanded into the gardening. And the Oyate Techa project brings together families in the area, and she got a high tunnel donated this year. This is just brand new from this year. Lots of tomatoes and peppers growing there now. She's planting another movable high tunnel soon. We help them out with recommendations and troubleshooting and that sort of thing. So what's next? One of the things that we've learned is the demonstration gardens really seem to be one of the most successful ways of outreach. People feel comfortable coming in, seeing what's going on. So we'd like to have multiple teaching sites across the reservation, again because of the transportation issues, with high tunnels, with gardens, raised beds, root cellars, wallapinis where we can, and also native fruit, which I haven't talked about much, but is a big portion of that as well. In the future, we just received a large agribility grant that we'll be working the next 3 years. And this whole grant was really a neat process to be involved with. My colleague worked with nonprofits on the reservation, and often you have these little nonprofits that are doing this and this and this and aren't working together at all. So he's trying to work together with them. At the same time, working with a group of elders who are the leaders, the community leaders on the reservation, going to them and saying, what do you think we need? What do you see that you want to have happen on the reservation? And this whole agribility project was developed out of that, not just physical impairment, but emotional impairment. And this is kind of a first for the agribility grant, as far as I'm aware of, that we went to them and said, our major impairment is this intergenerational trauma that exists on the Indian reservations. And we need to address that before people can move forward. So that's going to be part and parcel of our efforts in the future. Also with that, I should note that we make a real effort, whatever we do, to use locally available and low-cost materials whenever we can. There are no hardware stores on the reservation. They have to come to Rapid City, which is 50 to 80 miles away. So if you're working on the reservation, things that I've observed over the 15 years, long-term relationships really are critical to build trust. You can't have a 2 or 3 year grant and come in and expect to make long-term changes. What often happens is people get a grant, they come in, they do something, it's wonderful for 2 or 3 years, they go away, nothing's changed. And people on the reservation have learned that, and so they're very distrustful. Respect for cultural traditions, the fact that the family, the extended family, is the unit that is a functioning unit on the reservation. Not so much the tribe, but the family units. Flexibility. The best laid plans. You learn an extension to be flexible. When you work on the reservation, you double or triple that. Nothing's going to happen the way you expect it. Sometimes that's really good. Sometimes it's very frustrating. Partnerships, like I mentioned, there's all these resources that people are pouring into work on the reservation, but they're doing it in disparate projects, sometimes desperate projects as well. But if we can start to work together, we can get past this 2 or 3 year grant cycle and start to build a program that's going to last over time. Using local materials, I already mentioned. Also, almost all the work that we do on the reservation is going to be using organic methods with heirloom varieties whenever possible. This is kind of a diagram of my thoughts of how we connect. We connect with other organizations, we connect with those community leaders, with the elders, and we're talking with all those people and exchanging ideas and resources. And then when we go to the funding side, not only do we have to consider the usual sorts of things we consider for grants, but also participation costs almost always need to be written in. Materials, of course, labor, of course, and food, which gets kind of dicey with some of our grants. But anytime the Lakota meet, they have food, and they don't have money to pay for that food. So that's one of the places where sometimes there are other organizations and partnerships can come in too. So the bottom line is listen, and then listen, and then listen some more before you come in and start to decide this is what you need. With that, I'd like to give special thanks to Jason Shook, who is our SDSU Extension Tribal Programming person, who has lived on the reservation and has been doing a very wonderful job of pulling together these programs. Thank you. Sometimes there are getting to be more organizations that are popping up on the South Dakota reservations that are providing and looking for those kinds of seed sources. But, you know, we're always open to learning more about where we could get those sorts of cultivars. The one thing I've learned pretty much across the board, they equate hybrid seed with GMO. And they don't want to have anything to do with GMOs, so they're not going to have anything to do with hybrids either. Now, once in a while, we have a real problem with tomato spotted wilt virus in western South Dakota, and we may make some inroads in getting some resistant varieties in, but those are kind of special situations. Yes?
Along the same line, have you thought about partnering with Rowan White and the work she's doing? She's a Native American seedkeeper.
Oh.
Because I know that there are efforts in Wisconsin along these lines to begin the process of producing, saving seeds.
Right. I think Jason is linked into that side. We've been starting to talk about seed preservation, and probably that's going to be one of our next phases, is to address that interest.
Okay, thank you, Rhoda.
Thank you.